Welcome to Campfire, connecting primary producers. Campfire provides a solution-focused community for farmers and fishers to improve work systems and support mentally healthy workplaces.
Communication. It's so much more than words. And in a business, it's the foundation for healthy and thriving teams. Clear communication ensures everyone is confident and clear about their roles, and it helps in building healthy workplace relationships. A person who knows that better than most is family business advisor and coach, John Bruins. G'day, I'm Drew Radford, and John recently joined me in the Campfire studio to delve into how he helps families and businesses achieve common goals through communicating better. He believes one of the keys is structure.
It's definitely important that people have structured meetings and that we know what the meetings are about. It doesn't matter whether it's a 5-minute meeting, a 2-minute meeting, a walking along a corridor meeting, but we have to know what the meeting is reasonably for, and we shouldn't mix the reasons for the meetings. So when I say that, if I'm going to have a meeting about roles in a business, I don't want to be talking about roles and then what's mum going to think, or what dad's going to think, or what the brother or the sister's going to think. That's all irrelevant. The role has to be what the job is about. If I'm talking about an agenda about a production quantity or something like that, that might only be a 5-minute meeting. It could be a 1-hour meeting if we're talking about the strategy involved in that. And if we're going to look at 3 or 4 different options about how we're going to proceed in the future, that might be a separate meeting altogether. And a family meeting might be about, okay, do we want to give money to charity this year? Or what education do we want to have for our kids? They're family conversations and they should never be discussed. Not never, I mean, you're going to have conversations. But if it's going to be a meeting about what are we going to do with our kids over the next 3 or 5 years, which school are we going to send them to, that should never be happening in the workplace. You know, people are going to be people, and if husbands are working with wives, stuff comes up. You might get a phone call from the school, so you might end up talking about the school if something's gone on. I'm not saying don't do that, but what I'm saying, be clear about the reason you're having a conversation.
John, there's always going to be differences of opinion in any business. How can we resolve these issues early to avoid them becoming a conflict that gets out of hand and then leads into poor workplace relationships?
When it comes to having conversations that tend to get out of hand, most people have opinions, and these opinions are formed along the way, along the journey. And if I say to you, I don't like the way you've combed your hair today, you might say, well, I didn't comb it, and then you'll get upset with me because I've challenged your personal appearance. If that upset happens and we've never talked about your appearance in the past, then we've never had an opportunity to say, I don't ever want you to talk about my appearance at work. I think that's totally out of place, and we can have a clear conversation without you getting emotional about it. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense, John, and it's also about a lot of clarity there. But I'm getting the impression this is much more, though, really, than just a business running well. Surely it's about personal care, because I imagine unresolved conflict or strained relationships between co-workers and managers are going to lead to other issues, including poor mental health and poor workplace performance.
The conversations that people have, if we are able to be clear about what it is that we're trying to achieve, if we understand that people are going to be people and there are tolerances that we will accept and tolerances that we won't accept, it's better that we talk about those tolerances beforehand. I'm not aware of anybody that's 100% perfect. I make mistakes, and others around me make mistakes. It's how we treat each other when those mistakes happen. And if they continually happen, what are going to be consequences? In most cases, the unintended consequences are we end up having arguments that get out of hand. It comes down to resolve some problems that are already in existence. The only way I can resolve them is to talk to people to suggest, firstly, we need to have some sort of compromise here. We can't be intractable. And what would compromise look like to each one of the participants? But even when I'm asking that kind of question, it may be that I need to go deeper with that person or those people to find out what their values are. If somebody values achievements and somebody else is more involved and believes more strongly in relationships, then I've got to work out how then these two values can be worked to be both achieved at the same time. So I need to understand where you're coming from. And in a lot of cases, especially in families, we don't talk about what we're trying to achieve and where we want to go and what we want to do. That becomes personal. It's a bit challenging. So until we can open up and talk about the things that we really want, the things that we like, and the things that we don't like without being judged, some people think the judgment is the part that stops everything, then we might be able to resolve or prevent some of these issues.
As a part of that process of communication, surely acknowledgement of an employee's efforts or recognising their achievements so they don't feel underappreciated, or a family member so they don't feel underappreciated, will that lead into workplace stress if they're not acknowledged and their actions aren't being recognised?
I find that in family businesses, and it's not always by any stretch of the imagination, but parents have very high expectations of their children, and therefore when something is done right, there is an expectation that, yes, that's normal. And thank yous and pats on the back are few and far between. But parents also can be hypercritical when something isn't done to the standard that they have in their mind. And the first thing they do is talk about and criticise. So the more we say thank you, the more appreciation is shown when things go well, is just as, if not more, important to keep everybody at least understanding that, yes, things are okay. I mean, we're in the middle of a COVID crisis. People are not communicating as well as they could be, and yet businesses are still running. People are still working, and they're being challenged. We need to accept and understand that challenges are going to happen, and change is always going to be happening. So let's be a little bit more magnanimous and say thank you a little bit more often.
Surely having good conversation and making sure everybody's got the right feedback loop is fundamental to a healthy functioning workplace, wouldn't it be?
Sure. The conversations about goals, what we're trying to achieve, whether it's a day, a week or a month, there needs to be clarity around that. There needs to be conversations about how involved you need to be, and questions need to be asked by the leaders of these meetings. And the first question at the end of a meeting might be, well, what do you think about that? And that will give you a connection about, yes, I've got a process in mind. But the next question also should accompany it, which is, how do you feel about that? Which takes an individual to a different place, and they have to think about it differently. And that can then open an opportunity for an expression of, well, it doesn't really sit well with me, or it challenges my values, or I'm not comfortable with doing that. And then there's a different conversation that needs to be had. So the leaders of these meetings, when we have these meetings about health and safety, critical stuff. What do we need to be wary of? What are the things that could happen today that you need to be focused on? Focus on the good stuff, but be aware of the bad things that might happen. I don't want to walk into a harvesting machine or walk in front of something, walk in front of a tractor or get run over by a cedar. So how do I make sure, you know, what are the rules that we have around this machine? You know, do we need to stick the rules up on the outside of the machine for anybody that comes around it? Those sorts of things can be talked about, and then we can action them.
John, we've been talking a lot about verbal communication, but communication's got other components to it as well, from documentation through to signage.
Most people communicate verbally. We try to get messages across by putting up posters. If we look at posters, they're great the first time you see them, but once you've seen them three and four times, they become part of the big picture. There's so much going on around us that we're focused on what it is we need to be focusing on at the moment. So if somebody wants to have a health and safety hearing protection must be worn in this area sign, once I've seen it once or twice, it becomes a blur and I'm looking at the other things around that have changed. So I'm trying to see what my environment's like. That is a challenge. Documentation in meetings, seeing lots and lots of words and writing, depends on whether you're good at reading the words or not. sometimes there are people that don't really love reading those words, and it's better to come out verbally so that we can ask the questions. So sending out plenty of agendas with reports backing them up, people might not be so interested in reading the reports, or they might just have no time to prepare. So do we allow for those kind of things when the family comes together? What did we miss? What can we keep our eyes on? There's just so much to be aware of today.
John, we've covered a lot of talking, but I imagine listening's equally as important in this communication process.
I don't know who quoted it, but we have one mouth and two ears, and that's in proportion of what we should be doing. Listening is critical. Most people don't listen as well as they can. Listening, the critical part of that, and what I try and do is I listen to the whole conversation. My self-talk, I've got to suppress. Most people will be listening to a conversation thinking about how they're going to answer or what they're going to say next. A good question to ask when you're listening to somebody at the end of what they are saying, once they've completed their conversation, their side of the conversation, a great way to connect with them is to say, what I heard is you saying something like this. Is that correct? That actually improves that communication conversation because it proves, number one, that you're listening, and it offers an opportunity for the person who's trying to make the point that you may or may not have picked up exactly what they're trying to communicate.
John, if there's one piece of key advice for effective communication in primary production, what do you reckon it'd be from you?
From a communication perspective, I think you touched on it. If somebody's speaking, truly listen and then connect with that person and say, is this what I really heard?
Well, that's family business advisor and coach John Bruins. How, though, is that applied on a daily basis in a business like a family farm, ensuring that things are nipped in the bud before they become an issue? Hugh McDonald farms 3,500 sheep on a property southwest of Hamilton. Clear and healthy lines of communication are crucial in his family operation, as his son George will be taking over the farm in coming years. However, at present, he has another career and is not yet working on the property. So every key decision Hugh makes, he does so in consultation with George.
I guess a little while ago we set some broad parameters as to which direction the enterprise was going to take. And my view was that I felt if he was going to take on the farm in a couple of years' time, we should be setting the enterprise up for the direction that he wanted to take it. So we made a clear decision about that, and we had a lot of discussion about it, and we did the sums in relation to our composite and crossbred flock, and we've agreed to sort of head more towards composite ewes, and that's the direction we're taking. Yeah, look, it was good discussion to have, and a lot of it just revolved around economics and management, to be honest.
I understand in that communication process, though, you brought in an external party that was actually more in his age group. Was that about making sure that you were communicating in the right way and right language as well?
Yeah, definitely. Our view was that if I sat him down with one of my, well, in my age group, consultants, he might feel as though I'm sort of directing it in the way I want to go, because my consultant would know exactly what I've done, you know, over a period of time. So I thought it would be better to have a clean slate and for him to choose someone that he wanted to use. And that person interviewed me and my wife and George, and we nutted it out that way. And that worked really well. He felt as though he was sort of running or directing the decision making a little bit. And I think it gave him more ownership, really.
Do you have any clear structures in place regarding daily and regular communication? Are there planned meetings or planned communication structures at all, Hugh?
Yeah, we plan meetings prior to sort of major events, which requires some logistics regarding the placement of livestock around the farm. So that often revolves around your pasture management. So I guess the most important meeting is towards the start of the year when we're working out what paddocks we're going to be resting to lamb down in. And of course, you know, there's a fair lead time to that, but you certainly have to plan that lead time. And then Of course, we scan the ewes and work out how many are having twins and singles, and then that all narrows down what we want to do in relation to saving our or conserving the pasture on those paddocks. They're sort of critical decisions that are made annually and can change depending on how the season develops throughout the year. But the whole lambing process is a fairly major event. And others such as shearing and lamb marking, and we know what's going to happen there, so they're not quite as critical. You know, that's all pretty straightforward. But it's just more that logistical planning.
Hugh, in regards to that communication with George, it's kind of two things going on. It's your son, but it's a business transaction as well. Do you pick particular communication styles for particular times? And can you give me any examples?
His business has particularly busy times of the year. He's in the fertilizer business, so autumn and spring are very, very busy for him. And during those times, he and I like to keep track of what's happening on the farm with each other. So I will email or text him. I'll expect him to reply in due course. If I really need him, I would ring and he would understand that. But the other thing is about texting and emailing is that there's a trail, and I think that's really important to reflect on what we've sort of decided or discussed. And that might only be smaller points, but at least we understand and can reflect back on what the decision was rather than interpreting what somebody said. We all know how that can vary. So I quite like that, you know, simply recording your messages or recording your conversations. And it can take, you know, many different mediums.
Hugh, you've got a lot of sheep there. I assume you bring on contractors for shearing. What about communicating with them and setting all of that up? Is there a structure that you've worked out to make that as effective as possible?
Yeah, look, I built up a really good rapport, and we use contractors for shearing, for landmarking, for scanning. So they're an integral part of our business. And I have found that you don't just get contractors in to do a job and leave. You need to understand them, what their capacity is. And I always have the conversation and tee them up well in advance. Like when I set my calendar, when I'm putting my rams out, I'll be also sending a message to my contractor about when we're scanning and when we're landmarking. And I find out what the capacity of the contractor is, and I'll usually confirm that. Well, I'll always confirm it in a text. So if, for example, the scanning contractor's coming and he is going to bring a staff member to assist, and the date that they're going to arrive, and I'll confirm that they'll do X number a day, which will be in the conversation that I've had with the contractor. And that then gives me parameters on bringing sheep to the contractor, exactly how many I need to bring a day to keep the contractor happy and going. So, you know, we have a very clear understanding. And as a result, I have contractors that want to come back each year. You know, they enjoy being here because I treat the contractors as a team. You know, we're all a team together. And I make it clear to them when they arrive that we're a team. So I need to understand their capacity or limitations as well as they do mine.
You make a really good point there about them wanting to come back. That must be a significant workplace saving on a number of fronts, i.e. your time and energy of not having to try and line somebody up new, induct somebody new, generate a new process. That must be a significant saving that producers don't often calculate in.
It definitely is. And of course, you know, a lot of people will say with a contractor, if you're not happy with the job they do, you just don't re-employ them next year. It's not like having an employee where there's a whole process if you don't really want to keep them, if they're not performing. But, you know, I find if the contractor is competent at the job, then really it's only about the process and the relationship. And most contractors, they wouldn't exist if they weren't competent at their job. You know, they'll self-select because it is pretty competitive out there. And it is a great relief to have the same one each year. Look, I've noticed in particular with my scanning contractor, that his competence has increased quite significantly over the journey to doing probably twice as many sheep a day as he did when he started. Hence the conversation to begin with is critical because I need to actually get more sheep, you know, ready for him every day.
Hugh, there must be health and safety flow-ons from this as well.
Yeah, there are. And of course, if your contractor over a period of time and, you know, after a few visits, you know, we're forever making improvements to the workplace. And On a farm, there's lots of variables, particularly when you're working with livestock. So we're always seeking to improve, and I always ask, what can we do better next year when they leave, as by way of a bit of a debrief. So, you know, we've probably got it down pat pretty well at the moment, but again, there'll be something next year that we can improve on.
Hugh, what about that feedback loop? How important is that to you in terms of the communication process?
It's very important to both parties, Drew, because I found that people were asking me, are you happy with the job? And I thought, well, yeah, I should be actually giving that feedback without them having to ask. So I'm now more attentive to looking at the job. And of course, by them asking me, they then open themselves up for me to say, well, yeah, look, it's, you know, it may be a pretty good job, but there's some areas that I think we can improve in. And that's really valuable. Another thing which I found out in conversation, in particular again with contractors, was that if you provide feedback, if you say, look, that, you know, that's a great job, well done, they don't want to hear around the district that I wasn't happy with the job, because I've had an opportunity to say I wasn't happy, and it's important to them to know that they're doing a good job for their business reputation and their business expansion. So it's very critical, and I think we're all big enough to say if someone's not happy, I always say, you know, you put your hand up and we have a discussion about it.
Hugh, it sounds like communication for you, though, is very much listening as well.
Oh, definitely. I think by listening, you then, you know, you show you're probably being empathetic, and trying to put yourself in others' shoes, I think, is really critical to understand how they're thinking and listening to what they have to say. Everybody's different. You know, if you take shearing, for example, someone might shear 200 a day and someone might shear 130 a day, but there might be 200 roughly shorn sheep and 130 very well shorn sheep. Or it might be someone who normally only shears 100 a day that's learning and does 130 a day. Well, they deserve probably more praise than the person who does the 200 a day every day. It's not just about looking at what on paper what the achievement is.
Hugh, if you were able to provide one key piece of advice for effective communication within a primary production business, what would it be?
The key piece of advice is really identifying the task, discussing it, and then recording it so that both parties have a record, and that can be text or email or documentation, you know, paper document, it doesn't matter. But just recording it is, I think, critical to deflect any issues in the future.
Hugh McDonald, thank you very much for joining me in the Campfire studio today.
Pleasure, Drew. It's been great again to do another Campfire.
Thank you for listening to the Campfire podcast. For more information regarding Campfire, please visit the National Centre for Farmer Health website. All information is accurate at the time of release. This podcast was developed by the National Centre for Farmer Health and is funded by the Victorian State Government's WorkSafe, WorkWell Mental Health Improvement Fund.